Earlier this year, Main Menu spoke to Doug Joffrey of GW Micro about the launch of WindowEyes 4.5. Jonathan Mosen opened the interview by asking Doug about the response to WindowEyes 4.5 at the CSUN exhibition.
There was a lot of excitement about it. It's always kind of fun to go to a show with some new stuff and new things like that. So it brought a lot of crowd to our booth. I think the show attendance itself was down a little bit, but in the booth or in the exhibit area, it seemed like there was a lot of flurry going around, and some of the new things we were showing especially brought a lot of people to our booth.
I'm interested that you say attendance is down. Do people feel that technology has reached a bit of a plateau and that there's just not as much innovation as there used to be, do you think?
I'm not sure if it's that or if it was just the start of the mess in Iraq and all of that. I'm not sure what actually brought the attendance down. I don't know. CSUN itself has seemed like it's been going up every year for us, so I don't see that as going down for that reason, personally.
Well, WindowEyes users who have been with the product for a long while, I think, will be delighted with version 4.5, won't they? Because it really signifies a major unfreezing of the feature set with all of the work behind you now on porting WindowEyes to the 2000 and XP operating systems.
That's right. There was a lot of groundwork we had to do and a lot of just stability things. And we've always had the philosophy of making sure that we have a very strong, stable base, which has kind of hurt us in the feature set. But at least in the short term, it's hurt us in the feature set. But I think now that we've got that strong base, we've got all the OSs working, that we can now start putting in some of these features that people have been asking for and things that we wanted to be able to do for a long time. We can now do it with confidence, knowing that things aren't going to crumble from underneath us.
So can we go through some of those new features that you were showing off at CSUN? And I suppose one thing that is truly unique in the industry is the Citrix support.
Well, that's certainly the biggest thing that we've added that generated the most interest at the show, where people were coming over just to see that and just in amazement of how it worked. There were some presentations talking about the inaccessibility of Citrix and terminal services in general, and at least that's the way that they were going to word all of their presentations, and obviously after they saw what we had, they kind of had to do a double take on that and change a little bit of what they were about to say, because it can be made accessible. So we have been working very, very closely with Citrix. They've been extremely friendly and eager to get this all working, as are we. And so we've worked with them behind the scenes for a little while and did some things on their end, our end, or whatever, and we were able to show a very impressive demo at CSUN where we had a laptop sitting over there with a Windows 2000 server on it, and we had a couple other machines that were connected to it through a LAN, and we could actually log into a session running WindowEyes on that session, and it was fully accessible as if you were actually sitting at that terminal. So it was kind of boring to demonstrate because how do you show that? It just works. It's just like you were sitting at your desktop. But when you think about what's going on, it was very, very impressive.
So could you explain in greater depth then for people who aren't familiar with Citrix at all what it is and why this is such a breakthrough?
Sure. Citrix is one form of allowing you to have a server system sitting someplace that has all the applications that you would ever want to use or all of your employees or whoever that may be that may want to use. You install Office, you install whatever applications you want on that server, on one machine. And then through the miracle of terminal services and Citrix Metaframe, that server can then be connected to by several client systems who can connect into it, log in what they call kind of a virtual machine, or a thin client environment. It's got several names, which basically is kind of a dumb terminal, effectively. Everything is being run on the server side, so all the CPU horsepower, all the applications, everything is being done on the server side. So the advantage of that, obviously, is the system administrator just has to worry about this one server machine or however many servers they may have, but they just have to maintain that one system versus having to install everything on all client machines and things like that and get them all working and whatever, it can all be handled on one side. So it's very attractive from an administrative standpoint, which is why this technology is taking off. The problem is that in the past anyway, is once you start up that session from your client, your assistive technology products just die, whether it's screen enlargement, whether it was a screen reader, it would just go silent and you would hear absolutely nothing while you're on that session. Visibly, of course, everything's working and it looks like a whole new desktop in that little window. But from accessibility standpoint, it was quiet. And so that's the problem, and that's how we actually worked with Citrix to get WindowEyes itself to be run on the server side. so that it runs just like any other application, and the information is then ported over to the client side.
Obviously, with screen readers, responsiveness is really critical, and WindowWise is an extremely responsive screen reader. Are there issues in getting responsiveness really nice and snappy with this kind of thing?
Well, there's lots of ways of looking at all of this, how it connects and how that would affect interruptibility and just responsiveness in general and that type of thing. At CSUN, what we were doing is we were using an external synthesizer, the DeckTalk Express, hooked up through a serial port. So on the server side, the WindowWise was configured to connect to a DeckTalk Express, but it was configured to port its output to the client side. And in that case, you couldn't really tell the difference. We're running on a local LAN, 100 megabit, LAN system there. You couldn't really tell that you were running through a Citrix session. It was that responsive. Now, if you take that same thing and you go off into running it over the Internet, we've done that here a couple times from California to Indiana or whatever and just kind of playing with that. Of course, it depends on the throughput of the Internet at the time and all of that business. But it was acceptable. Then, of course, the next down step would be dial-up. And that we're not exactly sure how that's going to work yet. We've not done a lot of testing with dial-up. But we feel that WindowWise itself, if you're using a serial connection, would have very little overhead on the throughput of a dial-up connection. Because really all you're looking at, in addition to what MetaFrame or Terminal Services would have done, is you've just got that extra piping of the speech going across. And again, when you think about it, your synthesizer is running at 9600 baud. Your modem is much faster than 9600 baud, hopefully. So it really won't bring down the throughput that much. So that's one phase of it. The next phase would be if you're using the sound card, which I'm envisioning most people wanting to be able to use a sound card so they don't have to carry around an external synthesizer with them. So I could walk over to any sighted computer system and just use it without, again, plugging any hardware in. So the sound card porting is the next step that we'd like to look at, and it's fairly good. The problem is there's some interruptibility problems. Of course, Citrix never envisioned using the sound card the way we're using it. And so some of the porting of the sound isn't flushed when it should be, so you have to listen to a couple seconds of more speech and things like that. So those are some of the issues that we're dealing with right now and trying to resolve so we can get that interruptibility up where it should work. So if you're taking a sound card and you're running on it or dial-up, that might have a huge impact because when you port the sound, you have the ability of setting different encryption levels. Obviously, the more encryption you use, the less the the worse the quality. So if you want good quality speech on a dial-up, you may suffer on performance. And again, we've not done a lot of testing with that. So another option that we're looking at and we hope to make available very soon, if not when we release it, is the idea of connecting to the server session, but having the server-side WindowWise, instead of actually generating all the synthesis itself, the speech itself, whether it's through a sound card or an external synthesizer or whatever, actually have a virtual synthesizer driver that you configure it for. And that virtual driver would go to the client side and say, is WindowWise running over here? If it is, I'm going to use whatever you got. So I'm just going to port the speech itself, the text, really, whatever it is, which is going to be very minimal when you think of the whole picture of what's really going on. It's going to be a very small subset of the throughput. So it's going to send that over to the local copy of WindowWise, and if that local copy is configured to run through the sound card, then it would use the local system's sound card and processor to generate all of that. So in that respect, we feel that it will be instantaneous again, and that will give you the full flexibility of being able to use whatever your current copy of, your client copy of WindowWise. Because, again, if a blind person's running a system, they're probably going to want WindowWise running on the local system, and then when they log into a session, they're required to run WindowWise on that session as well. So we can kind of communicate between those two copies of WindowWise, which should allow dial-up systems to, again, have very minimal impact on the throughput going back and forth.
And is that talking to the client copy of WindowWise something that you're hoping for 4.5, or is that a future enhancement?
I am hoping for 4.5, even if it doesn't make 4.5, which I hope it does, but who knows at this point. It's something that we could make available at any point because it does not require an upgraded WindowWise. It just requires a new synthesizer driver to be made available. So you would get this driver, install it, and it would just work. So that I cannot promise for 4.5, but I certainly can say that the serial port option is what we're putting our most emphasis on now. We want to make sure that that works, because that at least is an acceptable option at the moment. Then we want to look at the sound card stuff, and during all of this process in the background, we're going to be working on this virtual driver as well.
All right, that's impressive. And a major revamp of the way that WindowEyes interacts with the Internet has been demonstrated for 4.5.
Absolutely. That's another one of the big things, new feature sets that we've been adding to WindowEyes. So there's tremendous change as far as browsing the web. What we did was, WindowEyes came out with this kind of this virtual cursor thing, what we call MSAA mode, very early on. And others have kind of jumped on board to that and things. But the others, to be honest, have kind of jumped over what we've done. They've done some pretty impressive things. So we said, okay, we started this. We want to make sure we're at the top of this again. So we stepped back and we looked at our competition. We looked at Homepage Reader, and we said, okay, what are they doing, and what can we make it do better? And not just mimic what they're doing, but take it a step above, you know, raise that bar. And so we did a lot of research. We went out, looked at all of that stuff, and we set up our specifications of what we wanted to do, and we feel that we've accomplished that. So, I mean, things like access keys and acronyms, abbreviations, forms, headings, languages, lists are now handled accurately. tables have been greatly enhanced, long descriptions, objects, paragraphs, quotes, block quotes, just on and on and on. Anything that we possibly can get our hands on, we're now exposing to the user. And we've changed that user interface a little bit to be more friendly. We've been criticized by some of our users that some of the keystrokes that we've had in MSAA mode, you know, required five hands and a couple toes to be able to hit them. So what we've done is we've given the ability of the user to set those keys now. So in the same way you can set any of the other hotkeys, you now can set any of the MSAA keys, like going to the next link or the next table or the next list or whatever, can now be defined to the user. But we've defaulted all of those keys to standard letter keys, T for table, L for lists, that type of thing. So it's much easier and quicker to be able to navigate around through all of those elements and things. So, again, the list goes on and on and on as far as what we've done within IE to be able to expose all of this information in the best possible format that we can.
Because
all of the verbosity options that we had before, it was very, I don't know, maybe before in 4.21 there was maybe 8 options within the verbosity menu. Now there are many options. Each element itself, like lists and tables and objects and flash and all of that, have their own available verbosity options now that you can individually set for all of those. So the verbosity dialog has been greatly enhanced with all these new options that you can now set and tweak the way that you want it to be on your system.
What's also quite impressive is the way in which WindowEyes 4.5 will allow you to omit certain items from a read to end. So if you're in a hurry to get an overview of a page, you can configure read to end to miss things that aren't important to you.
That's right. Not only is it nice within WindowEyes that you can turn on and off a particular feature of, okay, I don't care about paragraphs, where they start, where they end, or lists, where they start and where they end. But you can also, as you said, you can hear that as you're up and down arrowing through your particular web page. But maybe while I'm doing a read to end, which means I've just told WindowEyes to read me from this point all the way down to the document, I don't want to hear all of those items because it just kind of breaks my chain of thought. I just want to hear the content. So I can individually set the read to end option for all of these elements. So on or off while read to end, or on or off while I'm up and down arrowing through the document, which gives you total flexibility, I think.
I suppose you've got blind people who really like all of this control and being able to hear what's a heading in different types of elements and manipulating them. And then you've got others who are saying, gosh, you know, this browsing the web is getting more and more complicated and more verbose. I suppose the trick is to make all these configuration options intuitive so that people can silence the stuff that they don't want.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it does. With flexibility comes complexity at times, and that can be daunting to a new user, especially of being able to handle all of these things. So what we've done is obviously we've set the defaults to all these options the way that we think most people would want to use that. But we've also got what we call smart mode for a lot of these things, that we enable that smart mode. So if you have tables enabled, unfortunately tables are used a lot for formatting data as well, and they're really false tables. You don't want to know that that's a table because it's not really a table. It's more for formatting. Or the same with the paragraph. Maybe there's a paragraph there, but if there's no text in it, do we really want to consider that a paragraph? And the same with lists and things like that. So we have these smart modes that will weed out all of this stuff that we don't really consider, even though technically they may be these components. realistically, you don't want to have them represented that way because it's meaningless or used for other purposes. So we try to deal with that to circumvent the beginning user from being overwhelmed with all this information and things like that.
All right. And now you also have some changes in the way that the dialogues for hotkeys are laid out.
Well, WindowEyes has always given you the ability of being able to manually change the hotkeys for recurrent line or whatever. You could go to a menu option, open up a dialog box. You'd have a list box of all the items, and you could arrow to whatever you want, hit a key, and define it to that keystroke on the keyboard. Well, the problem is that our options have gotten more and more over the time, so our list box has been growing and growing and growing, and it's almost was unmanageable now to have all of those options in one big list. So, and especially now that we've added all the MFAA keys, there's, I don't know, maybe 40 or some of those keys in themselves. And so adding that on top of the 170-some we already had, it just became ridiculous. So we decided to break up those options. So now in our hotkey dialog, instead of opening up a dialog, it opens up a pull-down menu that you can then select cursor and key options, mouse options, miscellaneous options, or MFAA options. And then when you open it up, it's obviously keys relating to that group. So it makes it very, very nice to be able to quickly get without seeing all the other garbage in the way.
Now, where is that you are shipping DeckTalk XS32 with subsequent versions of WindowEyes?
That's right. We Eloquence is nice for a lot of things, but there are some issues with Eloquence, and so we're always looking around for options of other synthesizers that we can use with WindowEyes. Of course, it supports anything we can get our hands on, but as far as what we ship with it now, we decided to work very closely with Phonix, who is now the latest owner of DeckTalk, both the hardware and software products. But they're mainly, of course, only working on their software products now. And we worked up a great deal with them to allow us to include DeckTalk Access 32 with every copy of WindowEyes now. So when you install WindowEyes, we're not sure if we're going to default to Eloquence or Deck, how that's going to be. But they'll both be there that you can certainly install either one, Eloquence or Deck, and be able to use that. Now, this copy of DeckTalk will be locked to WindowEyes. It will only be usable by WindowEyes. So we'll still have our full version available that we've been selling. But if anybody's been watching our list, you'll know that that price has dropped down from $200 down to $75 for the full version, which can be used by any product that supports DeckTalk Access 32.
Okay, so that means that there's no additional copy protection as a result of DeckTalk then because it's locked to WindowEyes.
Exactly. So you don't have that headache anymore. It's just going to be there. It's just going to work, and that's the beauty of it. So there is no copy protection other than it only works with WindowEyes, and that in itself, as you said, is the copy protection, I guess.
Okay. What about those of us who own DeckTalk Access 32, you know, in our own rights? Will WindowEyes be smart enough not to overwrite that version of DeckTalk?
Absolutely. We want to make sure that this is all seamless to the user. So even if you select to install the version that only works with WindowEyes, it will not overwrite your full version at all. So you won't even know anything what's going on. It won't interrupt at all your existing copy, and they'll just be totally separate. So, yeah.
So what version of DeckTalk will be shipping?
Well, we're not 100% sure yet, but it's probably going to be in the we've been working with DeckTalk because they've had some issues with some of the other some problems that they've had over the years, and we've talked to them. They're very anxious now to resolve some of these issues, and they have for us. And so I'm not sure what they're going to be calling that version. Last I heard, it's probably going to be called 4.62, which is basically the 4.61 with all of our fixes that we asked them to resolve. They also are working on some newer technology things that hopefully we can pass on as that becomes available. But for right now, it probably will be the 4.62.
Okay, because DeckTalk ain't what it used to be. Some of the newer iterations of the software sound quite strange.
Well, that's some of the things we asked them to fix. When they came out with the 4.61, I don't know that too many people were actually using that or were that actually... I just don't know how many people were actually playing with it, who beta tested it or whatever, but there were some very big differences in the voice quality. The pitch seemed strange. It was just all around not good. And so, but it had some other fixes in there that were good that we've asked for. And so we wanted the best of both. And that's where 4.62 will come into play. So it will have the same old sound that you're used to, but have some of that static noise that some people were hearing on some sound cards or whatever, that's gone away. And some of the sappy problems that they were having in the past gone away and things like that.
There are also issues of excessive use of abbreviations, i.e. Sunday Microsystems, Windows 98 Southeast. Are they going to be looked at?
That's definitely on the list of things that we're working with them on. DeckTalk in the past had the ability of disabling all the abbreviations and acronym type features. Unfortunately, it had the side effect of causing major other problems, which is why WindowEyes didn't issue the command to tell it to stop doing that. We are working with them to resolve that so, again, we can get the best of both. We can shut it up without getting the side effects. So hopefully that will be in there, yes.
And is there anything else that I've missed that is new in 4.5?
There's lots of other little things that we're adding in it. One of the other features that we're putting in is error reporting, I'm sure some of your listeners are used to this, where if Microsoft causes some sort of problem or you get a GPF, and next time you boot up the operating system, dialog will come up and ask you, do you want to send this error information to Microsoft? Well, we've done the same thing. If the error was generated by WindowEyes, then WindowEyes, when it starts up the next time, will tell you that an error was generated. Do you want to send this information to GW Micro? And we've got lots of technical information. There's no private information, no credit card numbers. It's just information relating to the crash itself that will allow us to analyze that information to be able to make WindowEyes as stable as possible. One of the issues with Citrix was security. If having a screen reader running on a Citrix or a terminal service environment could generate some security issues. So obviously stability is a big thing for security. So we put stability as our number one priority anytime we see those problems. And so with this error reporting, not only will it help us be able to find problems that exist maybe rarely out there and certain people can generate these types of errors, but it can also give the user information because maybe that problem has been resolved. So we hope at some point to be able to not only receive the information, but return back a status of this information saying, okay, this is fixed in version blah or whatever, and be able to help them with that. But this error reporting has helped us tremendously, even in our private beta phase that we're using, that has allowed us to resolve a lot of these problems that are very intermittent and difficult to diagnose. So we feel that will, again, just help us with stability and then bringing in that security as well.
So does that collect, for example, whose serial number it is so you can determine whose system is having the problem or not?
No, we're not sending anything that would ever allow us to know who actually sent that information. So it's just strictly the stack, all the low-level programming type information that would not tell us anything other than just how the path that WindowEyes took before it blew up. But there's no information about what was on your screen at the time. There's no information about WindowEyes serial numbers, usernames. None of that gets sent through. We are contemplating about allowing the user to send us that information on the error dialog that comes up, maybe putting in an edit box and allowing the user to type in some information, like maybe I was on my way into Eudora when this happened or whatever, and be able to give us some private information if they choose and send that across to us so that we can get back with them if we need to. Because right now, unfortunately, we have no way of notifying that user if we have resolved the problem. But, again, that's because of confidentiality and things like that. We don't want to have the information. We don't want to have the user send the information to give us the information to get back with them. So,
very good.
Let's see how that works.
And when are you hoping to release a public beta of 4.5?
The public beta, we were hoping for mid-April. That's probably going to slip just a little bit, so we're probably looking at early May sometime. We want to get that out there as soon as possible, but we want to make sure that it's got everything that we originally spec'd for 4.5 in there so that it can be well-tested, and then we typically run a month or so, maybe put out a second public beta, I'm not sure, and then hopefully go out in early June maybe sometime.
Is it too early to talk about pricing at this stage for the 4.5 release?
No, we are looking at a $100 charge for this. And again, what we've talked about, there are more things than even what we've talked about. People can come to our website or send us more information if they want to know everything that's in that. But it will be a $100 upgrade if you're running the current version of WindowEyes. If you're not current, then you would need to pay whatever the upgrades are to get current, as well as the $100. And then, of course, if you have an SMA, it would just be an SMA hit on that as well.
Okay. I don't seem to want to cut you short. Feel free to let us know what else is new in there. This is great stuff.
I could go on and on and on. Well, some of the other big things that we've been working with, we've been obviously working a lot with Microsoft and some of the new operating systems coming out. Windows 2003 Server, which has RTM, I believe, which means we'll start seeing it on the shelf here pretty quick. That is the basically the XP Server version of, like, you had Windows 2000, you had Windows 2000 Server. Well, 2003 Server is basically the XP Server version. And that had some issues. The Microsoft, of course, has been very paranoid about security, and unfortunately, in the name of security, they broke a lot of accessibility things. And so we were on them, and Microsoft was testing with WindowEyes. We were testing with WindowEyes. We found some issues that they broke in the name of security, so we came up with compromises that allowed security to hold but also make accessibility in there. So we've been working very tightly with that. So 4.5 will support 2003 Server. The current version of WindowEyes will not, but the 4.5 will support that. Office 11 for Microsoft, which is the next version of Office, post Office XP. That we've been working very closely with them. We want to make sure that we don't have any regressions or any problems with Office, so we're going to make sure that that works well with 4.5. VisualStudio.net has become extremely popular. There's a lot of people that want to program, and VisualStudio.net is Microsoft's latest environment. In the past, we've not worked so well with the Visual Studio environments. We've made sure now that we do work with it. We've got a good relationships with the programming team at Microsoft. It's working with VisualStudio.net. In fact, at CSUN, Microsoft was giving a presentation that I was involved in. Basically, the presentation was regarding how Microsoft works with their assistive technology vendors. And I was one of the people that talked about how that relationship worked and what they've done to help WindowEyes. Well, during that same presentation, the product manager, Jonathan Gordon, of VisualStudio.net from Microsoft, gave a demonstration of using VisualStudio.net with WindowEyes. And the impressive thing is, he's the program manager, so he's fairly high up the chain there. He had the monitor off, or he wasn't looking at the monitor, and he was using strictly speech to give his demonstration. And so that's kind of the first time that I've actually seen a Microsoft employee who wasn't already blind give a demonstration without grabbing the mouse and say, look, see how accessible it is. And so he was strictly using the keyboard, no visual on the monitor at all. And so that was kind of impressive. I think they're finally starting to get it there.
That is exciting. There are a couple of things. Obviously, Office 11, that's around the corner, and that's all very exciting with its XML-based approach, and WindowEyes is committed to supporting that. People have been saying for some time that they would like to see a beefing up of WindowEyes support for Office in general. Is that in the works?
Unfortunately, we've done a couple things in Office, in 4.5, but the big things are going to be post 4.5. Again, it was a tough choice. We felt that a lot of applications are going web-based. Again, PeopleSoft was something we talked about at CSUN, where they have a lot of web-based applications and things such as that. So we felt that we had to beef up our Internet browser environment. We had to get that up to spec. We had to make it W3C compliant and well above all of that. So there are workarounds with Office. Yes, it needs to be improved, and yes, we can do lots of things to improve that. But we felt that because that it's not totally inaccessible. For instance, Citrix is totally inaccessible. Office is usable. So, you know, which one has higher priority? So we went with the one that was totally inaccessible. And the same with some of the web-based applications that are coming out needed some of this enhancement that's there. So we realize, we hear our users, we know that Office needs to be improved, and that will be something very high on the priority list post 4.5.
The other thing I want to keep track of with you is the idea of some sort of macro language or automation facility or something that gives a customizability well beyond what currently exists. Are you still looking at that?
And we're looking at everything right now. I mean, we've got some very nice things planned for our post 4.5 version, our next major release after the 4.5. We've already been working on a lot of that technology, we just pulled out of the 4.5 because it wasn't complete. So we've been spending about the past year and a half, working on some of the 5.0 features, the post 4.5 versions. So there's going to be some really powerful and neat stuff in this post 4.5 version. But unfortunately, that's all I can say at this point.
I understand.
We're always looking at the next version and working on that.
Because that would be a major change of philosophy for you guys to implement such a feature.
Well, we regardless of what we do, we would never, ever abandon the approach that we've taken to date, because we feel that there is always room for the approach that we've taken. It's not one or the other, I don't think. I mean, you need to keep what we've got in there, absolutely. So we would never abandon what we have done to date.